Thank you, Rehat, for this really brilliant movie. And I think everybody still is as shocked as you could be after seeing this movie. And I think everybody needs a minute to, in a way, digest the whole thing. But maybe we can start, like, what you would like to talk about the story, how you came to move the movie, how you did the research, and how you got hold of the footage you used.
I had been approached by Ford Foundation, who were working in extractives in the region, to do a story about mining. And I decided to focus my efforts on the Bafokeng Nation, which is the big success story for black economic empowerment. It's a community-based ownership rather than community-owned. And the strike broke out. And I thought, well, I'll go and start doing a bit of filming there. Maybe the strike will get into the film, show some of the conflict around the mines. And next thing, the big guns came out, and I decided to change the focus of the story completely to explaining the massacre, particularly when I realized a few months in that the footage, there was a lot of footage there which could tell the story, which could show the story, rather than people talking about it. And the key footage was from Al Jazeera. They had committed to giving, all the TV stations had committed to giving the Commission of Inquiry the footage they had, but it didn't seem to be forthcoming. So I started knocking on doors, and I managed to get into all of the TV stations. And once I saw the footage for the mine workers leaving the copy to go home, which you see in the film, I realized the police narrative, and this is a film really which was, its rationale is to counter the dominant narrative in South Africa, that these mine workers were crazed, that they were intent on killing the police, and the police were acting in self-defense. The police story went as follows, that they had been attacked twice in the minutes leading up to them shooting, opening fire on the mine workers. And that footage actually showed there was no, to the contrary, they were leaving in a disciplined manner, and according to them, they were leaving to go home. And then if you look at, you can see the way the barbed wire was placed, and the way the armored vehicles were stationed, and the way places they went in, these mine workers were being, it looks like they're being corralled in a certain direction in place for a turkey shoot. So the other footage, and Dumisa's here, the one of the characters from the film, and Sabenza, they sing songs about him in Rustenburg and in the Eastern Cape. Let's give him a round of applause. And it soon became very clear that that's what the case was. And through the good work of men like Dumisa, who's representing the families, 10 days ago, the charges against the 270 miners were dropped. And that was a big...
But just to people, one question, the police footage actually, they were given out just like that? Did they know what you're going to, what would you would do with that? Or well, did yeah, it, were there other resources or other ways to...
No, I was telling people the story, you know, there was a number of sympathetic lawyers involved in the commission, and one of them left his laptop there, and I stole it from him. And because you're not supposed to see it before it comes before the commission. And there was so much stuff, and that was one of the big challenges, is going through the hundreds of hours of footage and trying to make sense of it. And yeah, I think it's very revealing, and it has a particular aesthetic. You can almost sense their point of view, their fear. The 13th, you know, the railway lines, that incident is very revealing, as is their first attempt to negotiation. It reminded me of almost like first point of contact when the settlers arrived and to speak to the, you know, the natives, the savages, the fear that was going on there. So, yeah, it was very revealing.
I mean, I found it completely absurd. I mean, although there were 2,000 or 3,000 then in the end, but they had wooden sticks, wooden spears against, I don't know how many hundreds of policemen, I mean, armed to the teeth with armed vehicles. I mean, how can there be fear? I mean, it's completely absurd. I mean, is there any way of, in a way, explaining that or justifying that which you could follow? I mean, which would make sense? No.
Well, they wanted to, it was an unofficial strike, an unprotected strike, and they had the right under the South African Constitution to disperse. You know, you don't have the freedom of assembly if you're armed. And we fought in the early 90s for the South African government to see these weapons, cultural weapons, as weapons, because we were being attacked by the Inkatha Freedom Party, which many Germans were actually supporting, I think. It's a bit of a come round, but it's clear that, you know, after that subsidence of the violence, that many, many demonstrations of rural people or rural-based workers, they carry these cultural weapons, and they haven't been dispersed. And they're not seen as threatening. It's really a symbolic show of defiance. But I'm sure Demis has more to say, but he's from the region where they carry these sticks.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous because there was, post these killings, there was an occasion in KZN, KwaZulu Natal, where there was a ceremony of the king taking at a ceremony, I don't know whether it's his fifth or sixth wife. And you should have seen the weapons they were carrying, all of them, not less dangerous than the weapons that you saw there. Very, very sharpened, you know, weapons. But nobody ever thought that those weapons were being carried at that ceremony because they meant danger to anybody. It was accepted that that is the traditional way of going about. But let's put tradition aside. And I'm already shaping my closing arguments because at the end of this month, we want to argue the whole thing aside, I mean, to an end. Put aside tradition and just look at the objective evidence. Now, you have seen that a number of people, 17 of them, who died at the second mountain. That was away from those first 3 minutes, which we all saw, people being channeled in a particular way. to be met with people armed with R1 rifles. Now, those are weapons of war. At 200 meters, according to the expert evidence, those things are lethal. Now, the space you saw there is hardly 30 meters between the mine workers and those who shot. But what the objective evidence shows are the entry wounds of most of those who were killed, especially in scene two. Most of the entry wounds are at the back of the head, back of the bodies. So if you are acting in self-defense, it's a strange way of doing so when you shoot a person at the back. And as you saw one of the narratives by James Nichol, one of those who was killed on the 13th was about 800, 200 meters away across the river. And we found the cartridges on this side of the river, and he had died across the river. He had also been shot at the back. A strange and a very clever way of acting in self-defense in those circumstances. So, I mean, look, one doesn't want to be too ridiculous about a case which on its own terms is difficult to comprehend. And therefore, when the deputy president of the Republic of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, came, one of the questions that it was difficult for him to answer is whether he, now that he's in the levers of power, is prepared to say that under no circumstances in a democracy, just no circumstances, should we have had on scale a massacre such as the one that happened in Sharpeville and the one that happened where he was involved, the Bisho massacre, where 28 people, ANC supporters, were mowed down by Captain Gozo's military person, a Bantustan tin pot dictator. And then one of the massacres, you know, happened at the height of the negotiations. You know, and what we put to him, because he kept on saying, because we said, now why were you emphasizing trying to put down the violence when it is clear by any account that this was a labor dispute? In fact, Minister Shabangu, to her credit, had been the first one to characterize it as a labor dispute, and therefore it's an issue between management and the workers. But what does he do? Cyril even asks Lonmin management to go and convince, and he says, I am going to go and convince her, not to characterize it as a labor dispute, but as an act of criminality. And then, you know, I put it to him, but throughout your negotiations for transition to a democracy in South Africa, throughout that period, massacres upon massacre, Boy Patong was actually the one that nearly brought the negotiations period to an end. But who was at the center of saying no amount of violence should take us from the correct path of trying to negotiate a settlement? You were the one who, with Mayor and eventually with Nelson Mandela, emphasized that the violence is not going to take our path. Now, what has changed? If then you were seeing that violence is not the answer, why was it now the answer? Why were acts of criminality? So it's difficult. There is footage. I mean, the film couldn't get everything, but there is one Brigadier Mkhwanazi the head of public order policing. He has said, and we're going to use that in our argument, that if he had been in command, there's no way he would have ordered that tactical phase. And that is backed by what General Mpembe, the one at the railway line, telephoned this. General Mpembe, there's footage where General Mpembe, the night before, on the 15th, the night before, is in discussion with Sokwan of the NUM. He says, listen here, there is no way you can disarm 3,000 to 4,000 people on that mountain. The way to do it, please give us the names and the residences of these mine workers. Because the way to disarm them is to go where they sleep, surprise them there, throw a cordon around, take their weapons in their sleep, where they stay. And he says so, in a very forbidding, he says, if you go to the mountain and try and disarm them there, there will be bloodshed. That was in the evening of the 15th. So it was foreseeable. We want to argue, in fact, that it was premeditated, it was an act of revenge, that footage of the police who had been killed on the 13th that went viral throughout the police stations is actually behind explaining partly why it happened.
So other questions from the audience? Okay.
Thank you for the film, and thank you for defending the victims. Has the film toured South Africa, and has it been in normal cinemas or in special places, and how was it received, and did it make a difference in South Africa? I'm very interested in getting to know how the public opinion in the country is reacting to the movie.
Yeah. It's been a wonderful 6 months or so. We've quickly understood that the chance of getting it onto free-to-air broadcaster was very limited. They've kept us waiting. We've had over 200 screenings to date. We've bought equipment and big screens and taken them around, particularly around the mining communities and to show the mine workers. Some of these screenings have been up to 2,000-3,000 big. It's been amazing. And, you know, genuinely South Africans outside of those miners on the Platinum Belt believed that the police had no option, believed a number of things, that somehow that these shootings were justifiable. And it's only once they see the film. And that's allowed us to really build a campaign. We've always had the justice campaign, and we've raised serious money during the 5 month platinum strike, where these same mine workers were on strike for almost 5 months. And through the screenings, we're able to make their case, raise money, buy food, and get food delivered. And the churches then came behind the gift of the givers and so on, and really gave out tens of thousands of parcels of food. So it's been very useful, the dropping of the charges. And I think the film has certainly had an impact there. This happened after we managed to get the film on a number of community TV stations. So a few hundred thousand people would have seen this on TV in South Africa if you live in one of the metropolitan areas. And that's increased the social media presence. You know, hundreds of people join the site every day. We've got now over 10,000 people on the Justice Now for Marikana group. We've got 5,000 people signed up to receive the newsletter. We had 34 events around South Africa to commemorate the event on the 16th of August, just a couple of weeks back. So yeah, it's been incredible, and I think it's also a spur to action. It's one of those films which are, for many people, is quite radicalizing. The economic freedom fighters are taking the film and showing the film around now. So yeah, it's had a great life, and in many ways we've been able to subvert the medium. You know, it's a passive medium, genuinely, film, and by going out and having discussions and getting people involved, you know, what can they do? People want to know, what can they do after they've seen the film? And I've bought some DVDs for you today. The proceeds go to the campaign, 50% to run the campaign, 50% to the widows, all of whom are receiving no financial support. Take the film, invite some people to your front room, show it in your local church. Get on the website, look at the resolution that we have for trade unions. Get involved. You know, we also had 8 separate events around the world, pickets outside the South African embassies, screenings, commemoration screenings. We've got some great supporters in the room from who are frequenters to Berlin, formerly from Berlin. We have someone from Austria. Jacob, are you here? He's managed to get the film subtitled into German, so we've got a German DVD, you've got a Turkish version, and it's in all sorts of language, Italian, and Kosa, Afrikaans. We're doing a Shangaan version. So, and we're now selling thousands of these DVDs at $2 each to mine workers. So that's what we're doing. So get involved. Get your DVDs. Got some posters.
To me, it was quite obvious that the Commission and the NPA tried to find out all the guys from the minor that accused them for murderer, the main ones. Is it also obvious that from the police side, they tried to identify the ones who shoot it? Because we had one white guy who shook his fist in one scene, and obviously he was celebrating. Do we know how that guy is personally? And Rashid, we had that on the morning, we had that radio show with Samsku and Kuhn and Jung and Gomin. Was that SNBC show, and was it among the politicians the wish to have that show in the morning? Do you know that?
Do you want to take a few questions, or should we just go one? Yeah. No, that was just on the radio show. Was the initiative of the host, the talk show host. He was the one who brought the trade union leaders together and managed to convince them to go up to the mountain.
Well, I suppose a rider to this is the fact that whether it was out of his own volition or because of what he saw to be the kind of management in the SABC, he has since left. He's now in a commercial rival station, Radio 702. But then there's another story with Saudi being the head of COO and all of that. The question to me was, oh, no. I mean, as the film says, none of the police have been charged. It's as simple as all that. If anything, the charges that were withdrawn was because of the campaign, but they were ridiculous because they used the so-called doctrine of common purpose, where they charged the mine workers who were arrested for the murder of their own comrades. Because the theory is that they did something together, they had common purpose in doing an illegality, attacking the police. And in the process, 34 men, mine workers, got killed. I mean, it's mind-boggling, but then that was the charge. And those were the charges were dropped. Not a single police person has ever been arrested or ever been asked to give a statement, charged. It's another thing for the police to be charged and then be discharged in a court of law. Not to date.
Unfortunately, we have to stop here because we're running out of time and we're expecting another film by Jihan El-Tahri, Behind the Rainbow, which is to be screened right now. But I would like to ask you to leave the room because we have to change tickets. So please, and Rehat will be outside, and also Dumisa, if you have any more questions to discuss with them. So please go. Okay, sorry.